Welcome to the Healthcare Advocacy Podcast. On this podcast, you'll hear stories to encourage, inspire, and empower you to be the best healthcare advocate that you can be for yourself or for a loved one. The information provided in this podcast is not to be used for any medical advice. This is for information only and to support you in your journey. Please consult with your physician and medical team. In fact, share your favorite episode with your team and ask questions from that.
I wanted to tell you all about a volunteer organization that I started about 6 weeks ago. It's called Nightlight Inpatient Parent Support, and it is a phone hotline for parents who are in the hospital with their kiddos, either after a surgery or maybe in the NICU or just with an illness. And parents who are staying in the hospital with their kids feel alone. They feel like it is such a dark time. There really isn't anybody that they can talk to. Even other parents who are in the hospital at the same time with them really just keep to themselves because everybody's dealing with so much. But all these parents want is connection. So I started, with the help of Kristen Parsons, a volunteer organization, and we are looking for volunteers. We are also looking for donations. Right now, we're not a 501(c) nonprofit. We're just doing this kind of on our own right now. But one of the ways that I'm going to get donations is via this podcast. So I want as many listeners as I can get on this podcast. So let me know what information you want to hear about healthcare advocacy. Please share this podcast out on social media. You'll be doing myself and families a big favor to get this into hospitals across the nation. So again, Nightlight Inpatient Parent Support. We're looking for volunteers to be part of our phone bank. If you need some support, you can definitely reach out to me and I'll have the link to the phone number for the phone bank. Thank you. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for watching the videos that we've been producing throughout the week for our Fall Family Summit. Today is our last day of the summit, and I just wanted to answer as many questions of yours that you asked when you registered. So I have asked all of the speakers to respond where they best felt that they could. And we had initially intended to record this during our panel interview, but so many people asked questions after that was already completed. I thought we would kind of jump back on and do a little kind of Q&A here. So one of the questions, by the way, we had 17 questions, which I think was just so amazing. And I'm going to answer the questions first about the family questions, and then I'll make a separate shorter video with some of the autoimmune questions. So that way, if you wanted to watch one versus the other, you totally can just go right to that. So one of the first questions was, how do you help support children who have ADHD in their diet? So one answer from, I think that this was Alyssa who commented, and she said, gluten, dairy, sugar, and processed foods are highly inflammatory. Inflammation in the brain shows up in many ways, including behavior and focus. So if you can take out all foods that have food colorings or chemical additives, do go 100% gluten-free and or dairy-free for 4 weeks, and then you can reintroduce the foods. So it's really important that if you are going to make that commitment to 4 weeks of being gluten-free or dairy-free, that you do take out anything. So read those labels and make sure that the ingredients don't have gluten. It's not going to say gluten. It'll say something like hydrolyzed something, or if it contains wheat in any form, it's going to have gluten. in it. So things like soy sauce or other condiments, even potato chips. I was at the grocery store the other day and was reading the labels, and it said that the potato chips included wheat. I would have had no idea that there was wheat in potato chips. Even some cough medicines or different medicines, if they add it as an additive or a stabilizer, might have it. So just turn over and really read the labels. That's so important. Asking questions at restaurants, if there's any sort of writing on it, that's going to have wheat in it, and gluten is part of wheat. So gluten is a protein. And so basically how our bodies work, there's going to have a receptor for a particular protein that allows it to be accepted into our body. And so you can kind of think of it like a key and a lock. So the receptor would be the lock, and then the protein comes in there and fits in it. And the protein that we're talking about is gluten, that comes in there and turns on that switch, of that receptor. And so gluten itself can come in there and have a switch that can turn on some sensitivities, or other things. Why dairy might be something that you're being affected by, or your child is being affected by, is because the casein in cow milk dairy is very similar to the keys are very similar. So if the receptor for your sensitivity really would typically fit the key for the gluten and turn that on, casein can come and do this the same, or vice versa. So those are very bioidentical in how they fit into the lock and key and how they can turn on the receptor. So some people, when we talk about dairy, they're concerned about the lactose, which is a sugar. And then, you know, using something like Lactaid or lactose-free milk helps people, because that sugar is then broken down for you. But if your dairy sensitivity has nothing to do with the sugar that's in the milk, it has something to do with the actual protein. So these are micronutrients. These are important for building blocks for our body to have sugars, carbohydrates, and proteins. But how your body processes it is the issue. And the only way you're going to know how your body processes it is by doing this elimination diet that we're talking about here. So gluten and dairy are, you know, the big irritants. And so we would want to try to eliminate those. But that's for the food colorings and sugar. So, you know, sugar in an artificial form absolutely affects your body differently than when it's bound into a fruit in its natural form. And again, sugar was something that our body craves, because if you think about thousands and thousands of years ago, when we were either cavemen or hunters and gatherers, the fruit are going to be harder to find. And so as a way to allow us to find more fruit, they've made it sweet and taste good and tells our body, we want more of that. Well, the food companies these days, for many years, not just recently, know that that works like that. And they figured out a way to make sugar really cheap and really easily to be putting it into products. And the high fructose corn syrup is that way. So it's very inexpensive. It adds more calories to the food just automatically. So that's why we find it in, and it can act as a preservative. So that's where we find it in things like tomato paste and ketchup and cough medicine, because it can act as a preservative. It adds more calories. The food companies are able to get more stuff into their food, even though it really has no nutritional value to us, but it tastes good. And so we want to eat more of that, because it sets off those receptors in our brain, the chemical receptors in our brain. Oh, I like that. I want more. So the food companies understand and know all of this. There's no big surprise of why they're adding more sugar. And then sugar comes in many different names, as we've talked about in previous podcasts or episodes. So, you know, if we're looking at optimizing our health, no matter who you are, but especially for a child or an adult who has symptoms or who has the label of ADD or ADHD. Food matters. What we put into our body for nutrition matters. And if we are already struggling in a certain area, behavior, cognition, managing our body, giving it fuel that is not of the highest quality is going to make it that much worse. So in no shape of the word is, am I saying that this making these diet changes is going to eliminate somebody who has ADHD or ADD. It's not going to make their brain, it's not going to make them not have this. So for instance, I'm dyslexic, and if I eat a bad diet, I'm not going to be able to use my brain to the maximum capacity and to learn as much as I can. Reading is really hard for me. It's really hard for me to focus on reading long texts or reading chapter books. It's hard for me to do that. I can, but it takes a lot of energy and focus. And if I'm not eating right, those things are that much harder. So good nutrition isn't going to take away my dyslexia. It's not going to actually change those difficulties that I have. However, it's going to allow my body to work optimally. So things are going to be minimized or reduced to the point where you're not noticing them at all, or it's not negatively impacting your child or you as an adult. And the awesome thing about food is that it's here for us every day. And I think sometimes that is a catch-22 because it is all around us. Johnny down the street is eating X, Y, and Z, and your son or daughter is asking why they can't eat things at lunch like Johnny. And I understand that, but providing the good food sources and helping your children day by day develop a palate for the food is important. And it is a process, but probably looking at your own food choices over your life, it has evolved, it has changed. Things that you really liked as a child, you may not like as an adult. And maybe your parents did provide healthy quality food, high nutrient dense food as children, and maybe they didn't. But you know, presenting these foods and making it fun and making it stress free or low stress will help encourage good eating habits around food. So back to the ADHD answer, excuse me, I kind of went off on a tangent. So, and foods to focus on for children who have ADD or ADHD, organic vegetables, including all of the colors, including root veggies like beets, turnips, wild fatty cold water fish, free range pasture, grass-fed organic meats, or eggs if your child tolerates eggs. And the food called love, friendship, laughter, gratitude. So that's, yeah, we need to be nourished by that too. So not only the food that we can eat in the physical form, but bringing lots of love, friendship, laughter, gratitude into your child's day as a diet. Being outside, moving and playing in nature helps feed and allows the child to be more calm and focused too. So, you know, all those things are important. So the other response, I believe it was from Annette on the ADHD. Let me find where that was in my paper here. So increasing the amount of plant-based foods, such as celery juice, raw juices, fruits and vegetables will help provide the body with the supportive nutrients needed. And removing refined sugar, packaged and processed foods, MSG or monosodium glutamate, wheat, dairy, eggs, corn, soy, these all can exacerbate symptoms. So I'll talk about that in a second. Being proactive So MSG is another one that is often hidden in packages. So monosodium glutamate occurs naturally in our foods and meat products, and it's bound into the meat. And so our body can process that well. So a lot of times food manufacturers have gotten away from writing MSG or monosodium glutamate in their packaging because they know that that word isn't well received with the public. So they'll change it to be natural flavors or natural flavorings. And you have no way of knowing whether it's MSG or not. And the way they can get around that is because the glutamate does naturally occur in foods, but it occurs in a bound form and that we can process and use that well. When it's found in this free form, in the MSG form, it typically is not processed well. And maybe certain people will have bigger effects than others, but it causes headaches. It can cause inflammation in the skin, but usually headaches is a big one. So be careful with foods that have a lot of natural flavorings. And packaged and processed foods are meant to be there for our convenience, and I buy them too. But if we can kind of make that shift and slowly make that shift over time to be getting our food from whole food sources that are fresh or that we can freeze, we're going to be doing such a big a service for our body and for our health, our families in the long term. So, some people do have effects of MSG immediately. And for those people, they have that big impetus to figure out what's bothering them and clear it out. But other people, may not necessarily correlate one-to-one what they ate to how they're feeling. And so it may be more kind of a buildup, or if you're eating these foods every day, you're not really noticing that it's this one food because you feel like this time, you feel this poor all the time. And your child may not be able to express that they have a headache or to be able to tell you exactly how they're feeling if it's a young child. And it may come out as anger or defiance, frustration, anxiety, if they're feeling something in their body but yet don't have the words to express it. So, for just a personal story for me, I clearly remember as a young child growing up having a lot of gas and bloating after eating certain foods. And I couldn't quite make a correlation as to what was happening. But to me, what it felt like, and I remember sitting in the nurse's office, so I must have been in the third grade or fourth grade, crying because I kept saying, it feels like a tree is growing in my stomach. And they said, oh, it's gas, or you'll be fine. Just, you can go back to class. But nobody even mentioned that it wasn't fine, that it might have been something that I'm eating that's actually not helping my body, that these symptoms of the bloating and gas could be alleviated if I looked at trying to cut out certain foods. So, your child may not be able to always articulate what is going on, or might come up with this crazy story of what they feel, but they're doing the best they can to try to internalize and understand what's happening to their body when they don't feel well. I had a lot of anxiety as a child about anything, and my teachers, my parents just said that I was a perfectionist, it was all anxiety. And I didn't realize that later on that all the times I was crying in class, my self-confidence issues were all based in anxiety. And I have no way of knowing whether it was just age and experience that has allowed me to feel differently now as an adult, which I would assume that that's probably partially true, or is it also a change in my diet that is helping, that my body feels better from the inside, and then I can project that onto the outside. So, I'm not saying that these foods cause anxiety directly, and everybody is different, but your child probably has a limited understanding of what's going on and feels like this is just the way that they are. And I would argue that it may not, that's not the way that they are innately made, that something from the environment is irritating them and bringing out some symptoms that we don't want to see. That I feel like 100% we are all good people. I look for the best in people. And I think with our diet and our nutrition, our lifestyle choices, we can definitely optimize what we have genetically, what we were born on earth with. So let's see. Moving on to the second question. How do you get your child to eat well without guilt, especially when there are bad choices at school? And so, you know, I think that this is kind of the same thing with anything that we as parents feel we want to kind of raise our kids differently than our neighbor or than another person at school. So whether that is the use of curse words, or whether that is a religious preference that you might have, or some sort of family choice, this comes up all the time. Children are aware of how they're different than other kids. So I would say, you know, by 4 or 5 years old, they're noticing that their peers are doing things differently. And sometimes they want to imitate that and kind of see what that's like. And I think if we can stop and be a little bit more aware during our meal times, when we're eating foods, how we're feeling afterwards, again, the feeling of kind of being unsettled, your child may not correlate that to what they just ate an hour ago at dinner. So the feeling of being out of control, they may not correlate to what they just had at lunch. And again, it affects everybody differently, some more mild than others. But if the whole family is doing it, of course, it's easier. But then what happens when you have a family who doesn't want to commit, where your spouse doesn't want to make these dietary changes? You know, trying to let them know what you want to try. And as Lauren mentioned, even just for a 1 month experiment, 4 weeks experimenting to try to reduce the foods that you feel may be irritating, and just kind of making it a habit. New things are hard on everybody. Change is hard on everyone, whether it's in your workplace, in your family, just even personally, changes are difficult because habits form and neural pathways are laid down almost like a trench. And so in order in our brains, and that's just the path of least resistance. And that is the easiest go-to. And this is neurologically what's happening. Things just go smoother when it is something that we've done over and over and over again. So now here you come in with this new routine or these new options, and there's going to be pushback. So expect that, and be there to support your family, provide, you know, the choices in the house, take out the choices that you don't want them to have for that month, make it fun. Maybe we can add some sort of positive reinforcement for them, something that's achievable for them every day, whether it's a high five, a sticker, something that's meaningful for them, a little word, little notes in their lunch boxes, letting them know that they're doing a great job, of reminding them how well they feel after having their snacks, and making it fun. There are definitely packaged and processed items out there, especially now, that have decreased sugar, that are going to be wheat and gluten or gluten free and dairy free. So, you know, it just takes a bit of time of reading labels and kind of checking and making sure that that's, you know, following the plan for the month. As far as making your own foods and snacks, you know, that's a possibility too. And they're really not difficult to make. The biggest thing is just the time. So I understand if you don't have the time to do that for your family right now. So I think it's going to be hard in the beginning. As far as guilt goes, again, do you feel guilty for telling your kids not to swear? No, I don't think we do. I think if we have values as the adult, the family has a value, then it's very easy to come back to that value. Does it pass the smell test, right? Does it pass the peanut butter test they talk about in business? So if my value is that we're going to have a healthy family and all my family members agree, then these are the options that we're going to do for this next month to do that. Then every time that there's a distraction, it's going to be easier to kind of come back to, but this is what's going to help my family be healthy, or that this is what's going to help us meet that experiment for the month. And, you know, kind of just letting them know that this is something that we're trying together, and that mom and dad, or, you know, the head of the households are going to decide at the end of the month how it went. Like, that's not a choice that the kids are going to decide, but they can definitely give feedback. Let's hear what your feedback was, what you liked, what you didn't like. Let's pick some recipes. What do you, giving choice. So giving choice where it is appropriate. So you can have your celery sticks with some almond butter, or you can have carrot sticks with something else. So, you know, you can, with hummus. So you can give them some choice so they feel empowered. Sorry, my dog is barking. But you don't have to give them the choice, do you want this? Because if they didn't, then you're going to have to accept the answer of no. So let's take a look at the next question. Screen time during the school year and at home. So if screen time during the school year, if that's increased just because your family or your school uses screens, you know, that's definitely the way that the world is going. And I think it's tough because there's definitely research out there to say that, you know, X amount of screen time is negative on your child's development. I'm gonna just pause for a second and let my dog out. Sorry. Okay, thank you for your patience. Screen time is difficult, especially in school if they're giving screen time, but the research out there is to limit it to like the 2 hours, right, of being in front of the screen, including TV, including iPads, and electronics. And that can be absolutely difficult to manage, especially if you have more than one child. I struggle with that myself. Our schools do use iPads. My kids do watch TV. We try to definitely limit that and give other options. Like, what else have we done today? Have we finished all of our homework? Have we finished our chores first? We have to do the things that, you know, on our have to list before we get to do the things that we want to do. So trying to instill that, you know, making a list for them to check off, or tokens that they move over on a magnet board or something, so that children can start taking responsibility for themselves in a very structured way. So, you know, we talk about giving our kids choice, which I think is really important, but it needs to be a structured choice. We don't want to give them just a free-for-all, because that actually creates anxiety in our kids and in ourselves. You know, if somebody says to you, well, what do you want to do, but you don't know really what the options are, that can be kind of anxiety producing. Well, I'm not sure. I'm just going to kind of do what I normally do because that's what I've always done. And, you know, so if that's your kid's go-to is to grab the screen, or that's what they're used to in school and they enjoy just scrolling through stuff or watching lots of different videos, you know, giving them a structure where, all right, you want to watch some TV? I would like you to either watch an animal program or a science program. And we're going to write, I'm going to have you tell me a story about it afterwards, or for an older child, I want you to write 5 sentences about it afterwards. So at least if we are going to be, if kids are wanting that screen time, great. But then let's kind of bring it back to something that's pen and paper, or to have a discussion with you. So that's kind of a way to kind of bridge that gap. And I think also the opposite, if you completely limit everything, you know, your kids may have the desire to want it more, right? When somebody tells you no, you want whatever you're trying to get even more. So I agree, you as a parent, you're the one that's in charge, and you need to set the boundaries and the limits. And if that's truly what you want, you don't want anything at home as far as screen time goes outside of the school hours, then that's your decision. But I would argue that it might be a great idea and a great learning experience if you can try to provide some structure for your child and then give them some choices within that structure, so they still feel empowered and they feel like they're being heard, but you're setting some boundaries and limits within that. So hopefully that answered that question. Fall family-centered activities, I definitely have some responses for that. Let me find that here. I know that, I think Annette answered that. Oh yeah. So cooking classes, pumpkin farms, apple picking, fall festivals, museums, car shows, volunteer at an organic farm in the area or just visit one. Hay rides at forest preserves. I know this is a net because we don't have forest preserves in Colorado. Outside music concerts, escape rooms, archery. That's a great one. My boys really love going for archery. Hiking, driving to see the fall colors. If you are in the Chicago area, there is the Morton Arboretum in Lyle. Wonderful place. So nice to drive through there or take a short walk or bring a picnic lunch and watch the colors. There you can pick a fall leaf that's fallen and do the rubbing of the leaf. You can press the leaves in wax paper. I've even had the kids make those for their teachers. Or you can put them in wax paper and put them up on your sliding glass window or on a window, and then you have like a little window decoration. So you can find those activities online on Pinterest or just searching for those. As far as indoor activities, if it's too cold outside, you can set up an obstacle course. So take out your pillows and blankets and different things to build obstacles and go ahead and see how quickly they can go through it. Or I love having dance parties. So I'll set up a series of pillows like in a circle, and I'll turn on the music and say each pillow is a stage and have them land on the stage and do the dancing on the stage. And then we'll march around the circle as the music is playing. And then I'll tell everybody to stop and they have to freeze or we can turn the music off when it's time to freeze. And so all those are great listening activities, getting their bodies moving. You can have them try to make something up. Of course, there's Simon Says as far as a game, just games in general. If you've got some older kids, even as early as 3, we can start playing some interactive board games together. There's a lot of good games on the market. Learning Resources has some products. I'm trying to think of some other companies that have, Mindware is a website that you can go to that has a lot of early learning games with it. But as the children grow older, there's a lot of fun card games that can be played that don't require words, matching games, memory. You can do a scavenger hunt inside or outside, where you either draw a picture of what they're trying to search for or write it down in words, depending on the age of your child. Go ahead and hide the objects throughout the house and see if they can find them, whether you're doing it by number, find 3 of these magnets or see if you can find 5 things that are brown. So we can do that outside or inside. So those are some family fun activities to do during the fall. And let's go on to our next question. 5 strategies or supplements to build resiliency. So let's see, I do have that answered as well. Well, we've already talked about building up your resiliency by just decreasing your processed foods and, looking at, if you're looking at adding some supplements, you might be low in iodine, zinc, selenium, magnesium. Those are some trace minerals that, we often don't talk about, but, if we're starting off by maybe not eating the best diet right now or eating a lot of processed foods and not getting a lot of vegetables, I would like to see 8 to 10 servings a day of fruits or vegetables, and definitely getting those vegetables in there. If we're not getting that right now, then supplementing might be necessary, because a lot of the ways that our body is getting these trace minerals is by eating the high quality nutrient-dense foods. And as our body breaks down those foods, then we can get these minerals. Some of the vitamins are present in plant sources and meat sources, but they're different varieties. So that's also important to know too. Like for instance, vitamin A, when you're getting that from a plant source, it's good, but then our body has to process that carotenoid down into it just for us to use it a little bit more. If we're getting it out of some sort of animal organ meats, you know, if you are someone who eats animal products, it is a different form. It's retinol, and it's a different form of vitamin A for us to use. So just understand that you can get it from most things you can get out of plant sources, absolutely, but it's going to be processed in our body a little bit differently. Same thing with omega-3 fatty acids. So you can get lots of plant sources, and the omega-3 fatty acid is going to be ALA, and our body can absolutely use that, but we absorb and use that less than if I was going to consume the same amount of EPA, just because of how our body has to break it down differently. So so understand that when you're looking for either food sources or supplements. So if you are unsure of where you are in these levels, just getting a blood panel to kind of figure out if you're if you're deficient in any of these nutrients or maybe lower. And again, plant-based diet, if you're not following a vegan or a vegetarian diet and you do want to add some meat products in there, I don't think that there's anything wrong with that. I was a vegetarian for over 10 years and just decided that for me, the reason why I was a vegetarian is because I wanted to really focus on eating more vegetables. But what happened actually is we didn't really focus on eating more vegetables, we just added more grains. And so that was not really what I was going for. And so now I've decided to add small amounts of meat, maybe once or twice a week to be eat meat and really beef up on those vegetables. So every day my goal is for myself to eat those 10 servings of fruits and vegetables. And again, for my children, I try to make sure that they get one to two servings of fruits or vegetables at every meal. And snacks. So just kind of interspersing it throughout the day can really be helpful. So pretty much to build resiliency, we want to just start with that really nutrient dense diet. If we're not there yet, not a problem. This is a work in process. Nothing changes overnight. Go ahead and get that blood work checked out and see what nutrients you might be lower in and boost those up. Vitamin D, I also forgot to mention that. So vitamin D3 is the usable form of that. And, checking where your levels are now, there are definitely recommended or daily limits that we don't want to exceed, but trying to figure out where you're at. And then, of course, getting some sunlight, because we need that vitamin D to be activated for us to use that in our body. So especially during the fall and winter, there is less sun available to us. So getting out 10, 15 minutes at a minimum of getting out into the sun every day on the days that it's sunny in your area would be great. So taking a short walk at lunch, or maybe even having, if you're out, working, a phone meeting, a walking phone meeting, if you can, if you're a stay-at-home mom, going out for a stroller walk, in the mid-morning when it's a little bit warmer. If it's winter and it's not sunny where you are, it's tougher. So that's definitely an issue in the winter time, but supplementing with the vitamin D3 to make sure that we're getting that into our body, because vitamin D works together with calcium and phosphorus to help us bring the nutrients of the calcium to our bones for healthy bones. Among other things, vitamin D is incredible for our thyroid health as well. So it's everything is all integrated. None of these vitamins or nutrients have only one single role. And the role that may be affecting you or maybe off in you may be different than how it is in somebody else. So, you can read on packages or articles about that one vitamin is absolutely what you need to fix your one problem. And I would argue that that's probably not going to be your result. that if you just eat this one thing or you just take this one supplement, it's going to be the end all or be all, because our bodies are much more complicated than that and really work together synergistically. So it may be a couple of things that we have to alter or change, but starting with the basics and just clearing out all of the, removing, as Lauren talked about, all of the irritants and replacing it with the high quality nutrient dense foods, supplements if you need to, will be helpful. My dog is eating now, so we hear some munching in the background. So let me pause and let Jeff finish his lunch so we don't keep hearing that. Hi, back again. So yeah, so if, you know, I'm a mom of three, we've got two dogs and one cat in my house. And so to find some time of silence where I can talk to you guys is hard to do, especially on a Sunday when everybody is home. My boys are actually out getting haircuts with dad right now, so it's given me a reprieve from my Sunday chores to talk with you for a minute. So we'll just do a couple of more here. Somebody asked about auditory hallucinations and how to help their children know that it's not real. And I really want to stress to find a mental health provider for that. And not saying that it's a mental health disorder, because I'm not actually, let you know that I also have experienced auditory hallucinations much more as a child. I'll hear repetitive counting in my head, or sometimes... Okay, so back to auditory hallucinations. So like as a child, for sure, I've gotten these hallucinations too. So I didn't understand what was going on, but I hear these repetitive counts in my head, and I'm not the one doing it, and I can't tell it to stop. So it's not like an internal voice. It's not like self-talk. It's something completely different. And I went to a mental health first aid course a few weeks ago, and I asked this question specifically to the presenter, who was I don't know if she was a psychologist or a social worker, but I said, does that mean that I have a mental disorder, that I hear these auditory hallucinations sometimes? And she said, no. She said, that on its own is not indicative or diagnostic of a mental disorder. But I think that if it's something that is concerning enough for you, or if the child is thinking about harming himself or herself, or the voices that they're hearing are telling them something that is causing them danger, by all means, yes, please go and get that helped out, looked at. In the meanwhile, clearing out their diet and feeding their bodies high nutrient-dense foods, vibrant foods, is going to be important, especially if there might be some sort of mental disorder going on. Apart from that, making your child feel safe, validating their concerns, and letting them know that that you understand and that you're going to keep them safe, and that they, anytime they can come and tell you what the voices are saying. And sometimes if the children are having a hard time talking with you, this is not only about auditory hallucinations, but at any time, if the child's having a hard time verbalizing to you, have them write it down. So I have a share journal that we use, and my son, my oldest son, he has a hard time initiating conversations with me face-to-face because of anxiety. He just kind of breaks down to cry. So I wrote a little poem. I was going to see if I can find it. But I think it's important that your child has a place that they feel safe to talk to you about. So the share journal is a great place to start, where they can write the question down to you, and then you can answer it. And let them know, you know, your response either in person or in writing, because it's easier, especially with those tough discussions, to get it out maybe at first in writing. And dealing with uncomfortable emotions is a big passion of mine. And it kind of leads into the next question of how do we create more peace in our family? How do we get good at something that's difficult? Well, we practice. And so any of these things that we're talking about in the summit that aren't easy for you or your family right now, that seem a little bit like a struggle right now because it's a change in routine or change in diet or change in mindset, just understand that it will get easier with practice. Practice makes things easier because, again, we're bringing those neural pathways and digging them deeper as we keep doing this new habit over and over again. In the beginning, it's very cognitive. It's a lot of effort, and that it does take 21 days of consistent practice to change a habit. So again, 21 days of consistent practice. So if you're getting 2 weeks in and then everything kind of falls apart, you know, don't worry about it, but that's kind of where we have to start again. 21 days of consistent practice to form that new habit. And then are we even able to achieve what we're wanting to do in those 21 days? Or are we kind of getting stuck someplace below actually getting to that behavior that we want for a variety of reasons? So this is where it's great to have resources like Lauren, Misty, Annette, Alyssa, myself, and we're all available here for you online. No matter where you live in the country, we're here to help you in the capacity that that we can access you through. And it might be a Zoom call because, you know, we've got this technology that allows us to work virtually now. And so if you feel like any of us really spoke to you and you want to reach out, that's what our passion is to be helpers. And we all five of us feel very strongly, and we may each have a little different take on it, or our population who we treat might be a little bit different. And so please reach out to any of us if you have any additional questions. But bringing peace to your family, finding activities that, you know, are unifying. And yes, arguments and fights happen between siblings. That's normal, very normal. Vying for attention. I truly believe that we have three capacities as human beings. We can live in this reflexive level of fight or flight all of the time. We can live in this power position level, where I'm always trying to one up on somebody, or I'm really wanting to get the upper hand, or I'm driven a lot by rewards. And then we have this capacity as humans to be driven by our values. And at any given time, for any reason, we can be in any three of those levels. Obviously, we want to be at that highest capacity, the highest ability of being able to work with our values. But that isn't always the case. And a lot of times our children, because that capacity to be in that value, passion and purpose level is still developing, a lot of the times our children are living in this power and position state. And so siblings fight, siblings want your attention. So the number one thing I say to bring peace to your family is to be proactive with the attention that you give each and every one of your children and your spouse, because your spouse is important too, and yourself. Because if you're not taking care of yourself, you're not going to be able to be there fully for your family. So carving out 15 minutes a day, if you can, to spend individually doing a preferred activity that that child likes or that your spouse likes, that's a lot of time as you start to have more children. Or that's our goal, right? We want to fill up our cups, fill up our buckets with that attention, because attention is what the children want from us. And when they are acting in a negative way, you know, they're seeking that connection with us. And they're just kind of screaming it at us that they want that connection. And so we can be proactive by trying to give them that attention beforehand, especially if we're going to be going out as a family and they're going to have to be cooperating, making sure that they're getting quality sleep, making sure that they're being fed quality foods and enough foods that they have that energy, because everybody feels anxious and angry when we don't get food. If you can think of, you know, when you're running on empty because you're not getting enough sleep, how the littlest thing irritates you. So in your child who doesn't have the forethought or the understanding of what's happening, those all those things impact them to a greater degree, particularly if your child has any sort of neurocognitive issues like ADHD, dyslexia, autism. All those things are that much more significant for them, because right now they're just trying to get out of that fight or flight way. They're just trying to survive. And it's harder for them to access those higher levels of their capacity. But I truly believe as human beings, we have access to all three. So individual time with all members of your family would be the best proactive plan for peace in your family. And then just spending time as a family too. And you know, if it's once a week, you know, you have a special dinner that you do, or you guys have a special activity, maybe you call a family meeting, that's kind of fun, an activity into that. So those are all ways to help bring peace to the family. It's not a quick fix either. It's definitely a process. Asking your kids, asking them what they would like to do as a family. And just understanding that these little people are little people. They're not little adults. They are children, and they are growing, and they are learning. And we as adults don't do the right thing all of the time either. And so children are going to make bad choices. We want to stay positive, a positive learning environment, because we need to be in a calm and alert state for learning. We need to be in a calm and alert state for listening. So even right now, as you're listening to me talk, if you're doing five other things, I can guarantee you, you're not hearing what I'm saying, and that's fine. I mean, that, you know, you have other things that need to be done, but perhaps it might be better to have some time to just review, you know, whatever you're wanting to learn or listen. You need to really focus your attention on that, because multitasking is not a reality. We don't multitask. So I'll end there with our family focus. The last question was how much snacking is okay. A good way to think about it is this: quality over quantity. As long as they're eating a lot of plants, fruits or vegetables, nuts, seeds, it's a good way to ensure that overeating isn't happening. When we are hungry, that means our bodies are craving nutrients. So we want to provide, so that we're going to eat anything really, just because you're hungry. But if you're getting good nutrients, that should decrease those cravings. Having high quality animal protein that is wild caught or pasture raised, grass fed can be okay too. As long as it's not on every meal, you know, once a day or every other day. It's difficult on the digestive system, and we want to make room for more medicinal foods. So more natural sugars that are found naturally in fruits and vegetables. Avoiding packaged and processed foods, gluten, dairy, GMO foods, refined sugars is also important. Cravings can tend to subside when we put the building blocks back into our body that our body is asking for. So I think that was all of the answers for the family-focused questions. We definitely have a whole other questions for the autoimmune, and I'll record that in a little bit. So thanks so much for sitting with me, and have a very good rest of your day.
Hey there, it's Christine from the Healthcare Advocacy Podcast. Would you like to be featured on this podcast and share your healthcare advocacy story? Then sign up on the Sign Up Genius link under the description of this podcast, and we'll talk soon.